Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone, and today I sit down with wow, we've been buddies a long time, childhood friend. We got to play together for a brief time in 1997 with the Reds. And like myself, like my family, baseball has pretty much been his whole life as it has been mine. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Pete Rose Jr. to the show. Petey, 1-4, thanks for coming on, kid.
Hey, anytime. Glad to be on here, pal.
All right. Pops, man, big part of, obviously, he's your pops. Big part of my life, too, growing up as a kid. I knew Pete great as a kid. I knew him well as an adult. I had him on my show, you know, right before he passed. Everybody with the Pete Rose thing, everybody thinks they know Pete. I don't know that they did, and they make this, you know, when he passed away, they tried to make it this epic tragedy, and I disagree. I mean, was he complicated? I don't know. Was he simple? What? How do you look at him as dad?
As dad, that's how I look at him. As dad. I mean, as dad. But you got to see a side that a lot of people didn't get. You got to see him at the ballpark, and what you got at the ballpark is pretty much what you got at home. One of the funniest persons I've ever met in my entire life. Really cared about the fans. You know, and I'll tell you, Booney, when he passed, the thing that really overwhelmed me was all the tributes that people wrote in about how he changed their lives. Not baseball people, but like everyday people. And that really struck me, like, because listen, we grew up the same way. Listen, 8 was dad, 14 was dad. That's just how it was. The only difference was we got to go down the ballpark every night. And I tell people that all the time. Listen, I'm no different than everybody else. We put our pants leg on one leg at a time. The only difference is my dad's got more hits than everybody else's dad on the planet.
But it's true.
But he was down to earth. He's a people's person. You know, people got to see the Charlie Hustle tough guy side. But, you know, when you got to really see the true side of him, you really, I'll tell you what, man, he one of a kind, one of one, no two ways around it. Just the funniest guy I know. But you know what? Just one of the best people I know. I mean, and I know it sounds weird just because all the stuff that he did, but, you know, that's a whole nother side of it. I'm talking about the dad side. I'm talking about the family side. I'm talking about the way I grew up, the way my sister grew up, you know, that type of deal. But he was awesome, man. I mean, he's funny, and you know, the way he taught me the game is really unique but really special. I'm glad I had to listen to him. It's like, you know, with my son don't want to listen to your dad. I'm sure Jake didn't want to listen to you. Well, I had to listen to my dad because he's got more hits than everybody, and I'm glad I did, just on little things. But What a dad, and truly missed. I mean, you know, they say it gets easier, but it doesn't. And, you know, he's been gone for 2.5 months or 2.5 years or whatever it's been. And, you know, it's the same thing every day. You just want to pick up the phone and, you know, just hear that voice, hear that George Sugar come yelling at you on the phone. But what a gem, man. What a gem.
He was unbelievable. And I'll get to a little bit later about, you know, my thoughts with Pete. And you're right. He's one of a kind. There's nobody like Pete. You know, there's a few guys you run into in this game, and they're just one of one. It's like I played for Lou Piniella for 4 years. There's one of one. Nobody else is Lou. Nobody else was Pete. And I got a chance. He came on the podcast shortly before he passed away. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that, because it was a little bit of a different Pete than I've interacted with my whole life. Before he passed, was he content at this stage of his life? Do you think?
I think he was just kind of where it was, like where everything was, and you know, where the, I don't want to say the Hall of Fame, just kind of was, you know, you got grandkids, you know, watching them play sports, just wanting to live life, you know what I mean? And I think that's what the thing that I think he was content about. It was like, you know what, he did what he did. The numbers are what they are. It's out of his control. You know what, I'm not going to let it consume his life anymore. And, you know, he's just content just being who he was and just going to try to live life to the fullest. But I think you're right. I think he was definitely content. I think he just was kind of over the whole deal.
He was. And there was the last interview I did with him. He was a little, he was Pete, but he was a little bit different. He was he kind of said to me, he goes, you know what, Booney? He goes, the sad part about all this, he said, this Hall of Fame. And you're right. I mean, from the day, back in the 80s, to now, there probably hadn't been a day gone by in his life when the Hall of Fame hasn't been discussed around him with that name. And I'll get to it. You know, it's Ruth, it's Gehrig, it's Mantle, it's DiMaggio. Rose is in that breath. I mean, it's the fabric of baseball. I think of, yep, Ruth, that you see Rose in there. I think Charlie Hustle, he's in the conversation. But you know what was a little different about him, and how he is with us, is he's that raw Pete on. He's on all the time, but
yep.
Well, he was a little bit, you know, he said, Booney, and he had a real serious moment because he liked to joke. And he said, the only thing I care about at this stage, and he said, and it's sad. He said, they're never going to let me in while I'm alive. And he said, and they're not going to allow me to enjoy it. And my friends and my family, especially, to enjoy it. He goes, yeah, maybe one day when I'm long gone, he said, they might put me in. He goes, but, you know, who cares if my family and kids, and they're not going to be able to enjoy it with me, what's the point? It was a different side of Pete than I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. The way I tell everybody, when you start talking with Ruth and Gehrig and all, listen, when you've played here, you've been in Cincinnati, this is where we're from. When you talk about baseball, when you talk about Pete Rose, and I tell this to everybody when I'm traveling, he's our Babe Ruth. When you grow up, you wanted to wear 14. You wanted to slide head first. You wanted to hit in the crouch. You wanted to do whatever it is that he did on the baseball field. And a lot of people got mad about, but that's just Cincinnati. That's just us. That's just how we were brought up. But I think you're right, man. It just got to the point to where, you know, I kind of explained it. It's like when I played a minor league game or a big league game or a game here in the States, there wasn't a game I didn't play where I didn't hear something derogatory about me or my family. Right. So it's kind of the same way Pop's hearing about the Hall of Fame from, you know, whenever it was till the day he died. And I think he just kind of got sick of it and just kind of was like, you know what, I'm kind of at peace with it. You know, whatever happens, happens. You know, I did what I did and, you know, I moved on. Why can't everybody else move on? But, you know, I just think it sucks. I mean, that he's not here. I mean, especially, you know, we had Pete Rose Day here. What was that last year? And then when they, I don't know, when they took the ban off or they said he was eligible. I mean, Booney, I went to grab my phone to call Pops just to hear his. And I'm like, man, I can't. You know what I mean? So it was great. But then you get back to the whole, well, he's not here to enjoy it. And it's kind of like, well, what's really the purpose? You know, he's a Hall of Famer. I know he's a Hall of Famer. Everybody else knows he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, just kind of leave it at that. You know what I mean? It's as players, we kind of know. I mean, if you watch him play, I mean, you can talk the records. Go and watch the YouTube videos. I mean, I watched, me and my son, we were watching the 77 or 76 All-Star game in Philly, and he lines a line drive right back through the middle off Mark Fidrich to lead the game off. And it's funny. I listened to him talk. He's like, every All-Star game he played in, if he played in the playoffs the year before, if he faced the guy who was starting in the World Series the year before, he knew what he threw, so he would swing at the first pitch. If he didn't, he'd tell you, well, I got to take at least one or two to see what the heck's going on. And sure enough, take a pitch, next pitch, line drive up the middle. So, but we know what he did on the field. We know that he's 1-of-1. And, I'm just kind of over the whole thing. it's just kind of, it's just enough's enough. You know, the whole uncle tapping, you know, I'm tapping out. You know, it's everybody wants to debate this, debate that. That's fine. You guys can debate whatever you want to debate. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, 4,256 hits, most winning games. The records go on and on and on and on. And like you said, we come in, his game, in the game and there's one-on-ones. There's one Barry Bonds. There's one Pete Rose. There's one Babe Ruth. There's one Ty Cobb. You know, you, and you, as players, you know who they are, and you know what, whatever they do, they do. I mean, hey, did Dad make mistakes? Of course. Absolutely. He'll be the first to admit that. And, you know, we all make them, and it's just a matter of, you know what, he never got a second chance. And you know what it is, the whole saying, and we can't really do nothing about it. We just got to live, you know, live on. And, you know, the only thing I wish is, you know, when people talk about him, they talk about the good things he did on the field, how he played, how he battled, how he was there for his teammates, how he went to the post every night. I mean, for him to go to the post every night, and it's like, I go back to that 80s team, and everybody went to the post every night. And it was, I got older and I understood that everybody went to the post because if 8 was a little banged up, well, 20 was banged up, well, he wasn't going to let 8 down, and 8 was going to not let 14 down, and 30 and 31 and 21 and on and 11 and 9 and so forth. So it's like those guys really played together, and it's just like, you know, that kind of stuff that pops, that you didn't see from the outside, but you saw like we saw. It makes it that much more special. I mean, he went to the post every single day. And even later into his career, you know, I remember walking in when he was a player manager, and he looked me dead in the eye and goes, hey, you think I should hit second tonight or third? And I'm just kind of looking at him. I'm in high school. I'm like, third, Dad? You know, and then we'd be sitting on the bench. Hey, you think I can hit this guy? You know, I remember one night we were in Houston, and Browning, Otis is throwing a one-hit shutout. And it's like in the eighth. And he looks at me and he goes, you think I can get a base hit off this guy? I'm like, Pops, of course you can. He walks down to Tom Brown and he goes, hey, I'm going to hit for you. He goes, Skip, listen, I feel great. No, I'm going to hit for you. All right, Skip. Went right back up, helmet on, bat, top batting glove on, one up. I think he had a line drive to left field, man.
Top batting glove. See, those are the little things that people miss. Top batting glove. That doesn't exist anymore. It's always the bottom batting glove. But back in those days, glove top hand. Batting glove, it's like you didn't even nobody batted an eye at it. You had a spot built on one hand and a Brooks on the other.
And the best part about it was 14 and 8, any kind of playoff all-star game, helmet on if they're the visitors, out to the line for introductions. Catcher's helmet on. I saw that Tony Pena got introduced, had the yellow pirate helmet on, was getting introduced, which was classic.
And for those of you watching and listening to the Brett Boone podcast today, we have a little group of guys from our childhood, Petey, and we trade. I mean, Petey will throw a video to Aaron, my brother. I'll throw a video to Petey. I'm telling you, how entertaining it is. I was watching the Baseball Bunch with Pete the other day, and my wife, she doesn't understand any of this, and I'm cracking up, and she's like, what's so funny? I said, you don't understand the level of hilarity I'm watching with Pete trying to teach these kids how to hit. I mean, if it's that, it's the Aqua Velva commercial. It's endless. And every once in a while, when I see an old Pete Rose video, I think of you. I think of how funny it is, and we'll get into some more stories because I got a bunch of them from the World Series. The night after the World Series, I sleep at your house, and I wake up to an ass in my face and a fart and a fart so loud. And then there's Pete. Here's what I remember, Petey. It's we win the World Series. Me and you are kids. We don't even know. We're so naive. This is part of our life. And they have the party, and mom and dad. You know, 8 decides to go home and they're going to go out and celebrate a little bit. Pete says, the kids can stay with me. I stay at your house. Your dad throws us on the pullout couch.
That's right.
And all I remember is I had a velour shirt on. I got a Philly cap. I smell like beer and champagne from the night before. And I remember just opening my eyes as probably a 10-year-old. And I got Pete's ass spread eagle over me, farts in my face. Says, hey, Mullion, get up. We got to go to the parade. Cracks a Coke and we're off to the parade.
That's right.
I mean, it's stuff like that I can't.
Oh, you know, man. Those are
things you can't. You can't replicate.
You can't. I mean, the best thing you're talking about the play. I love it that your dad always used to say, well, if Pete would have busted ass to get over there, I wouldn't have had to pick, you know, run all that way.
Right.
But that's not the kicker. The kicker is he catches it. The basketball dribble, one off the turf, the shovel pass with the open first baseman that Bobby Wine gave him, the shovel pass to Tug McGraw, and then the clap, the sprint back to first base. Listen, it's game seven. He dribbles a baseball off the turf right back to him, to the shovel pass right back to Tugger. Let's go. Let's go win the World Series, boys.
It was like he was in a movie. We appreciate it more, I think, than most people, because it's so old school. It's so in your face.
The spike of the ball at first base.
Oh, every time I see a video now, because there's a lot of clips from those 80s teams, you know, it was one of the best until this last World Series with the Dodgers in 25, which was an unbelievable World Series. I said, that's going to go into the archives with the 80 World Series, who were a little biased, but that's one of the greatest World Series of all time. But whenever I see those clips and I see Pete spiking the ball,
it's great.
I can't smile any bigger, and people don't know why I'm smiling. I'm like, I can't even start to explain it to you.
And the ball always, Booney, the ball always went right back to the dirt on the pitching mound. I don't know how in the hell he did it, no matter where he was.
With the skull cap underneath the hat,
just always to
keep it formed.
Just grabbing on like a helmet. Oh my God. I remember one night, Booney, he was just a manager, and we're sitting in his office, and he's putting his spikes on. And I looked at him. I said, Pops, really? You're going with the spikes? He goes, just in case. I said, just in case what? He looked at me. He goes, well, just in case I got to get in. I said, Dad, you got a pullover on. You only have a jersey on. But better yet, you're retired. So he used to do his routine to a manager. I mean, Jim Leland, him and my pops, managing in spikes.
Bobby Cox,
hey, but no uniform top, pullover, always a pullover, spikes on, but little stuff like that. I mean, for I don't know how many years I had the Brett Boone tribute. Left blinker was out every time I went to the plate and hit.
By the way, Petey would text me all the time, and that's what he kind of was my mantra for him was, you always got that back pocket out when you're hitting. What's up with that? It was a question. And then it became, left blinker's
out.
I'll tell you what I thought about Pete, and we grew up very similarly, and we've been asked ad nauseum, especially in our childhood, well, what's it like, you know, big shoes to fill, whatever. But you're always asked this. You live such a special life growing up as a kid, such a special childhood. And I always get the question, who is your favorite player? You know, every kid has a favorite player. I didn't. I said, you know what? I didn't have a favorite player because I went to the yard. And one day it was Pete. And the next day it was Schmitty. And the next day it was Tug. And the next day I was helping Manny Trio shoe polish his glove. I said, I didn't have Bull. I didn't have a favorite. I loved them all. But when pressed on the question, I said, but I'll give you this. I said, if there was one, I look at my dad on how to be a professional. He taught me a lot. I said, but if you want to talk about the epitome of once you put the uniform on, once the anthem's over, how you go about your business, Pete Rose is it. I said, I don't know if any before or since has done what Pete, how Pete played the game. And the thing that I think separated it, it's a simple, I've got it down to this in my mind on Pete Rose. What separated him from everybody else? I never got five hits in a game in my entire big league career. I got a ton of four hit games. And I'll tell you, when you're 4-for-4 and sitting in the dugout and your team's winning 10-2, you're feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Like,
pretty I'll good say. Day, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then I get up that fifth at bat. And I don't get a hit. And I go 4-for-5. I still feel pretty damn good. And when I try to explain what was Pete Rose like, I said, if Pete's got four, it's important to get five. And if he doesn't get five, he's going to be pissed. I said, I think that truly separates him from everybody else. I mean, he's still, he's not going to, that's not going to ruin his night, but it's right. kind of going to ruin it. Like, I should have had that fifth hit.
Right.
And that's what I, when I try to explain Pete in a nutshell, that's the difference between him and pretty much anyone else that I've been around that's ever played this game at the big league level.
Yeah, you're right, man. And that's what it was instilled in me was you play it like it's your last. Now, I didn't do that like Dad, obviously, and nobody did, but he took it to the extreme. Like it was, you know, and it goes from every little, like, I'm so thankful I had to play Pepper every day of my life. And I hated Pepper every day of my life, but you know what? I had to throw him strikes, and you know, he's working on hands, you know, feeling the ground ball. Then you're working on your throwing. And when you play catch with him, you got to hit him in the chest. You know, I'll give you one for you. And I don't even know if you know this, but you may, but it was the night that he broke the record. And I, you know this, that so we always, me and Pops always walked out together. The tunnels were at Philly. We always walked out together. We always walked back together. So we walk out, just a normal night, no big deal. He's one hit, he's tied, so he's going to break it. So Old Riverfront, you got the two entrances, the one down by the bat rack. So he would stop, put his helmet and bats, or put his helmet up, put his bats in, because, you know, he always carried his bats. Remember the two bat baggie he used to take on the bus all the time in spring training. But he put his bats in, put his helmet. I'd grab a ball out of the umpire's bag, go down there and sit, and then he'd do whatever, look up and give me the nod. So then we'd go out and play catch. So he gives me the nod and we go out to play catch. Place absolutely goes crazy. I mean, it's September 11th, 85, and everybody's there. They see rows 14. So I go to throw and he's not out there. So I'm out there by myself now. Now I'm nervous because I'm like, these people are cheering for me, at least in my mind. I got rows 14 on my back. They all of them think it's my dad. So there, it's a standing ovation. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So then he steps out of the dugout. Brett, the volume goes up by tenfold. So he walks out and he gives me the nod to let it loose. So the first one, here it comes. I airmail it probably 25 feet over his head. He must have knew this was going to happen because he had another ball in his back pocket. And you know, when he gets past, he gives you that hard throw. So then he takes the ball and throws it. I catch it. I'm like, oh my God, I can't. So I go, now this one's back in here. I'm choking it. I throw about a 15 footer and he just calls the whole thing off. Bounce it, goes in the thing. Now I'm more devastated because you can't not hit my dad in the chest. Cause if you do, that's it. It's like when you first get in the cage, if you hit the top of the cage and you don't hit 10 line drives from midway point down to the left side, we're done. So I'm devastated. Plus it's the night. So I'm down sitting by myself and I'm sitting down like this and he comes down. And Brett, I swear to God, this must have been one of the nastiest things anybody can do, but it's the greatest. He comes down, he puts his arm around me. He said, "Hey, I just wanted you to feel like what it's like to play in front of 80,000 people. Keep your head up. See you tomorrow." And he just kind of went about his business. And I just kind of came up and I'm like, holy shit, did that really just happen? But it's another teaching moment that he wanted me to be out there in front of 80,000 people. So when I had the chance to play, like, you know, in September, I wasn't nervous. And sure enough, it's like he was always teaching, whether he was teaching or not teaching. It was crazy. But like that, and it's like, you just made me airmail one and short hop one. Then you come down and just tell me you did it on purpose. Just wanted you to feel what it was like in front of 80,000 people. Like, really, Pops, really? But my head was up, and then you know what? The rest was history. But little things like that, man, it separated him. Like it's how he used to teach. And listen, I don't know if eight was like Pops, but he never slumped. So he wasn't a really good teacher, but with the things he taught, as I got older, they really made sense and they were better than anybody has ever taught me, especially on the hitting side. Like, he would always tell me to stay down, stay under the ceiling. And what the hell does that mean, Pop? Stay under the ceiling. And I remember my son was still in a high chair and he came over and we were watching the 75 series. He goes, right here. And he hits a line drive to left field and you just see him stay down, stay down, stay down, balls out. Then he comes up. I'm like, boom, there it is. From that point on, It everything started to make a lot of sense. But just like the little teaching moments, I mean, God, like playing Pepper, paying attention. I remember, you know, they used to tell us, hey, if you want to sit on the bench, you got to pay attention. So I attribute that to, that's why we paid attention when we played as much, because, you know, dad, hey, the game's going to tell you what to do. You just got to listen. You got to pay attention. You know, I remember, hey, you're going to sit in the dugout. You better pay attention. You know, just little things like that. You know what I mean? But it was awesome, brother. I mean, it was the way me and you grew. How about Richie Hebner fly balls in spring training?
Hacker hitting them straight up.
Do you remember how, and I used to get so mad because you'd sit there and fucking go behind your back and catch him. And I'd be like, how? And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm going to try this. But if dad sees me do this, I'm done.
Oh, yeah. Pete will get mad at me for doing
it. Right. Right. Yeah. But I remember Hack hitting them a mile high. And it was just like, we kept telling, I think he hit us like 25 to 30 fly balls in one day at Jack Russell down the right field line.
Yeah.
Just like and then we go to where we stay, Indian Rocks Beach. You'd either come over, I'd go over. You know, I remember the little lake you had at your place in Philly when I spent the night, when me, you, Arnie, and Little Bull, they had that little like diving board out in the middle of the lake deal at your place in Philly.
Oh, yeah, in Medford. Yeah.
In Medford.
Absolutely. I remember
like all that stuff. Going to the ballpark, I mean, playing down by the cage, man. I mean, and
Philly, you know, fanatic.
Oh, my God. Dance Party USA, brother. Dance Party USA. God. I just all. And then, you know, I was sitting here thinking before it came on, I'm like, I never really thought about this. But the coolest thing for me is I got to share my big league debut not only with my dad, my mom, my family, you, Aaron, Eduardo Perez.
Yeah.
And the sucky part is, my dad wasn't allowed to come down in the clubhouse after the game. I couldn't put Pops on the pass list. A lot of people don't know that. But my dad, like, eight came to your big league, came down to the clubhouse, signing balls. I had to meet my dad right outside the double doors, you know, after the game. But I remember I got to share that with you. I mean, I remember you calming me down. I remember Eddie calming me down. I don't think Aaron was there yet. Aaron was later. He came, I think, a week later because they were in the playoffs in Indianapolis. But to have you guys there, it was like a dream. It's like it came full circle, man. And I just thought about that. I'm like, that's some cool stuff, man. Like for,
and I remember me and Eddie, you got a knock in the hole.
Yeah, your first right. I had a dream on the bus going to Jacksonville. I hit a double down the line and I was going to slide head first in the second. And Jeff King caught it by that much, or it would have been double down the line. Yeah, I remember. I remember it was like yesterday. I was sitting there on the rail and he walked in. I looked right at Eddie Perez. I said, Darth Vader's here. And I felt him. And sure enough, the crowd started going crazy. And here we go.
Yeah, right. I remember your debut. Your dad was sitting right behind the on deck circle. I remember I hadn't seen Pete in a while. And I went over and I said hi to him before the game. I said, you nervous? He goes, he looked at me. I said, you nervous for Petey? And he kind of gave me that look like, you kidding me? No, let's go. He had the big glasses on. You talk about dad giving you lessons. And you're right. He was very subtle. Him and my dad, very different people. Completely different. Loved each other, respected each other a ton. But they're oil and water.
Yes.
And dad will tell this story. He told this story to me and he was in awe. I said, Pops, what about Pete? He goes, Brett, I'll tell you a story about Pete. He said, when he first signed with the Phillies, it was a big deal. He's coming over from the Big Red Machine, signed a big deal, was kind of the guy they brought in to lead this Philly team to a World Series. He ended up doing it. But at that time, you guys were going through personal family things.
Yeah.
Especially with him and your mom.
Yep.
My dad said, Brett, I wake up every day and the head, you know, back, this is before phones and the internet. So everything was a newspaper. He goes, Pete's on the cover of the newspaper. His private life is just spewed out. He's going through all this mess behind the scenes family wise. And he goes, and this guy's going out and getting hits every night. He goes, I don't know how he does it. He said, so I asked him, I said, Pete, you're going through this messy divorce. Your laundry's on the front page of the Inquirer every morning. And this is so Pete. He goes, I just want to know, how are you getting two hits every night? And he goes, calls him Bobby. He goes, Bobby, let me tell you this. He said, going 2-for-4 every night, it's a hell of a lot easier going through what I'm going through than going 0-for-4. And then he just says it like that. And moves on. That's, and Bob Boone, you know, the valedictorian, kind of the straight arrow bow tie guy, is just sitting there with his mouth open like he doesn't understand. But that was Pete. And those are the little things he taught you. And I thought as a professional athlete and what I've been through and what we go through mentally, that's a pretty damn good lesson right there. It's like we should worry about everything. It's a hell of a lot easier when you're getting a couple hits to deal with life. You deal with life on life's terms. But it's like, man, when I'm getting two hits every night,
yeah,
pretty easy. It's much easier going through it. And it was just quick. It was to the point. But that's how Pete did it. And it was just like, bam, hit you, get out of the room, and it leaves you thinking like, well, that was pretty simple, but he's right on target.
Yeah. You know, Brett, his mental game, to me, I'm convinced, is above anybody that's ever played, above and beyond, just from tricking himself that he feels great when he doesn't, tricking himself to feel like he's swinging good when he doesn't. You know, I remember asking one time, why do you always hit afterwards? You take Billy DeMars down the cage after the game. And he finally told me, he said, Pete, I wanted to leave the ballpark with a good feeling. I didn't want to feel like I just went 0-for-4. I wanted to leave after I felt good coming out of the cage with Billy D. And little things like that really made a big difference. Like, listen, I know I didn't play a long time in the big leagues. I should have, for whatever reasons, whatever, it is what it is. But when I was older, later in my career, the stuff that I really took from him, it made a difference. You know, quit taking BP. Quit, you know, I'd be at the ballpark at 2. You know, you asked anybody to play with me late in my career, I'd nap from 3 to 5, get in the whirlpool, get in the shower, and go play. My first swings in the game, I remember I had a home run one night. Jay Gibbons, he's standing at home plate. He goes, how in the hell do you do it? I said, it's in the blood. And it just walked away, and he couldn't believe that. But just the little things that he used, you know, hey, if you're slumping, don't say you're in a slump. Tell everybody you feel great. If you struck out, tell everybody that was the best 4 strikeouts you've ever had. If you made an error, say that was the best error you've ever made. And it's like you start putting all these things together. Like if you really dive into Pops, you dive in on the mental side because, hey, you know, we all know one blessed physically, you know, whatever, you know, physical traits, not a 5-tool guy. But when you start working upstairs and just the like we're like you're talking about, like with your dad, like saying that stuff, just little things like just and then just walk away. Like I remember, you know, Tim Kirchen always tells a story wrong. You heard the story. You know, I go to pick him up. He gets to the halfway house and I pick him up.
Oh, this is that was next up on my list. I try to tell the story that you've told me, but I said, I don't do it justice. You got to let Petey tell it. All right. So let's set the stage.
Okay.
Set the stage for me.
Okay. So he served 6 months in prison. He gets out. They release him to a halfway house. So he calls me. He says, hey, come and get me. Pick me up. Let's go have some. Let's go eat some Big Macs. Loves Big Macs. Okay. Yeah. You got it, Pops. Go down, pick him up. We go get like, I don't know, 4 or 5 Big Macs. We go to this place called the Western Hill Sports Mall. Okay. So it's an indoor tennis place, but in the back, they've converted it to batting cages. Okay. He knows this. I know this. Okay. Everybody that's in Cincinnati knows what. Okay. So we're sitting down eating and he kind of just, hey, what's going on back there? I said, Dad, come on, you know what's going on back there. Let's enjoy our Big Macs. You got to come up. Hey, Pete, how you doing? Whatever. Okay, let's just eat, enjoy our time, whatever. No. Hey, well, what do they got going on back there? Okay, I don't know, Dad. I don't know what's going on. So he gets up and he starts to walk to the back. So now, mind you, there's people that are in there that, like I said, he's our Babe Ruth. So they start pointing. There he is. There's that. There's Pete Rose. He's right there. So he walks into the back. Guy named Jay Sweet is a guy that ran the batting cage in the back. So he grabs an aluminum bat and he gets in the cages. Remember, it's like set up to where the outside ones, it's a wheel machine. The light comes on and then the other light pops up and it spits out, right? So he jumps in the fastball one, 85-mile-an-hour one. I'm like, this is not going to go good. Here we go here. And there's probably 25, 35 people starting to gather around. And Brett, let me tell you something, man. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. He gets in there. He jumps in there. He's got a sweatsuit on, you know, it's zipped up. He got the baggy pants and, you know, he gets it and he hits the sands and this ball spits out and it spits out in a hurry. Sure enough, whack, whack, line drive right off the machine. Everybody's in shock. while everybody's in shock, he turns around, flips the bat up in the air, the aluminum bat, clink, 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 looks at everybody. Some things never fucking change, do they? And just walks right out of the cage, sits right back down, and crushes two more Big Macs like it never happened. Brett, this guy was in prison for 6 months. And this is his first swing out of prison? Like, you can't make this up. It's fairy tale. If Jesus throws his best fastball, it's coming right back at G.O.D. It's coming right at you. I'm sorry. I mean, but it was, Brett, it was amazing because we've hit off those machines. Like, if you haven't seen them in a while, sure enough, just in the stance. Too bad it won the Twilight stance. You know, remember the Twilight stance at Cincinnati? He'd get that elbow up and Twilight the Sun when he used to play those Twilight doubleheaders. I said, Dad, what was that? Well, that would shade the sun. You know, if I'm facing Nolan in the shadows in Cincy. But Brett, it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen happen, and it was done with the flair of just like I knew this is what was going to happen. Like I'm talking a linea right back through the middle, like a linea.
That doesn't surprise. I could see him right now. I could see him doing it, giving you that look like, would you expect anything different?
That's right.
Back to
that's
it. That,
right.
That was Pete. I remember the car rides home in spring training. Your mom used to give me back rubs. She used to have those long nails. I remember that fondly as like a 8-9-year-old kid in the front of the Porsche Targa because we all had to fit.
That's right.
It was
stopping the Carvel Pete. Ice cream for ice cream on the way home.
Oh, he was to this day, Petey, and I think my kids all grew up and they always looked at my wallet. They said, Dad, why don't you have a wallet? You had this stupid rubber band. I said, Pete Rose taught me that back in the day, because I remember looking at Pete and going, he always had a bunch of cash on him. I said, Pete, wait, why do you don't have a wallet? He's like, nah, this is the way to do it. He had a rubber band. I forget what. Well, soon enough. You know, we get these clunky wallets, these leather wallets, and everything doesn't fit right. I just said, I'm going to start doing what Pete did. Now, I've moved on to, I use hair ties that the girls tie their hair with. That's what I use now. But to this day, and all my kids, they started doing it. And they're like, oh, that's just what Dad does. No, I got it from Pete.
Big bills on the inside, ones on the outside, so nobody knows.
That's right.
That's right.
I don't know if this is true. I love telling the story, though. And I said, you know, because I don't know. I'm sure he did in the long run. But back in the day, I always used to ask him, I'm like, Pete, why do you have so much cash? And he's like, no credit cards. He goes, when you have a credit card, he goes, you put your credit card down and you just spend. And you'll tend to spend more. He goes, when you got to peel off those bills, it makes you feel what you're buying. And then you'll make good decisions. It's as simple as that, put the way Pete put it. But it's like, when you really think about it, that is pretty good. You know, you're booking a trip and it costs $4,000. Tell you what, if you peel off $4,000 in hundreds, you're like, wait a minute, do I really need to go on this
trip? That's right. That's right.
But it's a simple lesson that he just says, matter of fact, boom, on to the next topic. But that's what, to this day, you know, I have my thing. Oh, why don't you have a wallet? I said, well, when I was a kid, Pete Rose used to, and they're like, no, really, why don't you have a wallet? I said, that's the reason, is that I saw that. And then when I was old enough to have a wallet, got my license, I started rapping it like Pete.
That's
and
right.
Those are the little things that I forget about. But now, you know, so we're sitting here reminiscing. I'm like, that's why my wallet is the way it is. And I get pissed because you need two hair ties to make it officially tight.
Yes.
You get one hair tie, it's loose, it's falling out. You get two, you're good. Three, bam, you're locked in.
Well, he used to have the big rubber bands, and you can only get those at the racetrack.
Right.
So he used to have the big rubber bands. And if you remember, he had the really tight pants.
The Sansa belts.
Because
he gave them all to Marty Brenneman. Marty Brenneman used to, and I used to call Brenneman. I'm like, Brenneman, it's not the 70s anymore. You got to get rid of the Sansa belts. And he wore them for it. Still to this day, when I see him, I'm like, yeah. It's good you moved on from the Sansa belt.
That's right. That's right. It was. And the best part about it is he couldn't dress a lick. But you know what? He pulled off anything and everything with the best.
Oh,
from head to toe.
Right now they were at some event, and this is back, you know, mid-70s. You got Bench there, Perez and Morgan. They were at some event. He had the big old glasses on.
Oh, yeah.
And they were just walking. I forget what it was, but it's another one of those, like the commercials when they pop up. It's must-watch TV, especially when you're, you know the backstory like we do. It's like, all right, I got to figure out what he's doing. And then he'll say something. I'm like, that's Pete. That's Pete.
It's priceless, man. It's just... The backstories are the best. Like if you go and sitting here, like you go to the 80 team and just all the backstories of not the 80 team, but everything around the 80 team from like Gus, Petey Sara, Bushman. I mean, you go.
I got to put it in context. Gus was the strength. He was a kung fu strength and flexibility guy. Pete Sara was our trainer, the Phillies trainer back in the day. And Bushy was the clubhouse guy. Who's another? You talking about one of ones that the clubhouse man for the Philadelphia Phillies for probably 15, 20 years. His name was Bushy. That's what we knew him by. He was a one of one. He's a one of one. That's a one of one.
That was a one of one. God, yeah. I mean, all those characters is just, oh my God. We grew up in that. That it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, Petey Sara used to stay in the back. Right, you know where the weight room was, but he used to.
Oh, Pete! No, Pete Sarris. I'm sorry, he wasn't the trainer.
Coop was the trainer.
He was the guy that did the shoes.
Yes,
he was the guy.
Remember, he used to sit in the back where all the bats were before you walked into Gus's room, and he used to never come out of the hole.
Right,
and then you had remember Hank. What was Heinrich's?
Hank was a left-handed BP thrower.
I mean, there was a thousand BP throwers. Yes. Just guys just coming in, don't know who you are. Just come on in, have a uniform. Bushy, take care of these guys. And next thing you know, they're out taking BP.
I got a question for you. This is 1980 because that year was so huge. And not only were the playoffs, it was the Phillies against the Astros. Still to this day, there's clips that come up on Classic Sports all the time because it was such an unbelievable series. But you're going to know this. I didn't go to Houston. I think you were in Houston, but I keep seeing – there's a big comeback by the Phillies. And who's the Wendell guy? All of a sudden, it's Wendell guy.
I have no idea.
He was like a friend of somebody.
But the best part about it was.
He had his name on his uni.
Right. I asked my dad who that was, and he couldn't give me an answer. But I can't get past whoever. I think it was it Manny Trio or somebody scored. My dad comes out. And gives him the biggest, like, give me 10, and spanks his ass harder than I've ever seen in my entire life. And then you see this Wendell guy come behind him. He's got a towel. He's waving a towel. They're out of the dugout. And that was, I think that was that the game my dad ran through the stop sign and plowed Bochy at the plate?
I think it was.
But you're right. It was number 19, Wendell. But if I remember right, wasn't Marty Bystrom number 19?
I don't, you and Aaron, by the way, Petey Rose and Aaron Boone, you want to remember stuff. They remember everything. They got the numbers down. I think it was. I think it was a guest of Dallas Green, who was the skipper at the time. But what people don't understand is nobody's allowed just to be in the postseason dugout, let alone have a number and a name on your uni. And they're like, Wendell, who's he? I don't know. He's a bar hop, but he's friends with Dallas. So we made him up a uni and put him into the playoffs.
He's the manager of Wawa. That's what he is. He's the manager.
Yeah. And how about this though? He's just celebrating like, yeah, I'm a part of the team. And the other team's like, imagine players nowadays, if some random guy, Wendell, and it's like, who is this guy?
Who's this Yahoo?
But hey, it's all right.
It's funny. I'll tell you. So I was playing in Mexico in the summer. We played in Tijuana. My dad came to Tijuana. You talk about a treat. So he comes down in a car, whatever. So he got my dad and the limo driver or the car driver sitting on the bench with us because he couldn't sit in the crowd, whatever. One of our guys hits a home run. And this goes back to the Wendell story. One of our guys hits a home run, kind of big in the game. Place is crazy, Tijuana. There's music going. My dad, there's girls dancing on the dugouts. My dad's looking around like, you know, what the hell's going on here? Whatever. Sure enough, we hit a home run. The limo driver is second in line besides the guy that's getting ready to hit on the field, on the dirt at home plate, get ready to high five the guy on our team that just hit a home run. What are we doing here? And my dad's all jacked up. He's laughing. He can't believe, but this limo guy, he's out there high fiving everybody like you're part of, like you're hitting next. It goes in the line of what you just said with Wendell. It's like, who are these guys?
Like, I wonder if Wendell to this day is like, I wonder if I, because it's not like he just sneaks into a
phone.
That's like a huge turning point in the series where the Phillies come. They're like on the brink of elimination. They come back and win, end up going to the World Series, beating Kansas City. And at the biggest spot, like there's Wendell. And I wonder if Wendell's sitting around right now going, that's me.
He's
probably at this stage. He's telling his great grandkids he was on the team.
Numbers retired. Got it in glass up on the wall somewhere in powder blues, by the way.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yes. You remember
they need to bring back the all maroons. That's what the picture of me and you, they need to bring back the Saturday night all maroon unis.
And they got plenty of unis these days, man. That's one thing I notice, you know, it's actually brilliant. Brilliant from a marketing standpoint, because now you got fans. They need to have all six caps and all six unis. And
it's awesome.
Yeah.
Those Saturday night unis were off the chart. And remember, we got them as father and son unis because our father and son game was on a Saturday that year.
Right.
Remember, we got those. They were in a box.
Well, the thing about it, and people don't understand this. Yeah, it's how old are you now? I'm 57. You're 56. 57.
Yeah.
This goes back to my childhood, and Aaron will still bring it up to me today. We used to laugh because Petey. He came over from Cincinnati. I'll tell you what, he had two unis, just like the big boys. He had two roads, two homes. And remember I had the practice jersey that like my grandma sewed on my name on the back. You had like the team issued one. I'm like, why does Petey get the good one? And I got this sewed on my back with the little letters instead of the big letters. To this day, me and Aaron talk about all the time. Petey had the better unis than we did as a kid. But those were times, kids don't get to do what we did anymore.
Right.
I mean, I'll be over at mom and dad's for dinner and she'll have pictures up and there's, I'll catch a glimpse of me, you and Aaron on the float. Down Broadway in Philly in 1980. And we're sitting there and the look on our face is like, man, we've had a long day. We got to get home. We got a party to go to with our buddies tonight. They're making us ride on this float.
Like, that's right.
No big deal. You look back, it's like what a special childhood we had and
how it was. It was unbelievable, man. I wouldn't want it any different, man. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I played for so long to try to get back to the big leagues because I wanted my kids to grow up the same way we did. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, think of all the stuff we learned. Think about all the, not only baseball stuff, but life lesson stuff that you learn. I mean, it's amazing, man. And plus what we got to do as kids, man, I'll tell you what. And it's, you know, and it shows, I mean, look at Aaron. He's doing an unbelievable job with the Yankees. And it's funny. Everybody always asks me baseball stuff. And you know what? You're probably the same way. I'm sure Aaron's the same way. Eduardo, it's just baseball. It's really not that confusing. At least it's not for me. Everybody tries to confuse it. It's just baseball. I mean, it's just at the end of the day, I remember Dad taught me it's damage control. Either if you're behind, you're trying to get the tying run to the plate. If you're ahead, you're not letting the tying run get to the plate. Other than that, everything else is pretty much the same. I'm like, yeah, Dad, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. But, you know, it's just what a run. I mean, what a run we had, you know? I mean, what a run. I mean, I tell this story, and you might not even remember this. 97, it's our last game in Montreal. I remember the McKeon wouldn't play me. You probably remember all that because Pops came out and said that if he was in baseball, he would manage the Cincinnati Reds. So my playing time got shut down to pinch hit, if you remember. So I remember Saturday, Willie Green went into McKeon's office and said, hey, I got my 85. I got this, that. You know, get Pete in the game. I'm done. So Sunday comes, I finally get in the game. I don't start it. I get in the game, whatever. So game's over. So we're on the plane. We're going back. And I forget who the traveling guy was, passing out checks. All right, great. So I just try to get mine quick and then you see it, of course. And of course, you're going to fucking put me in my place. Hey, what? How much you get over there? hey, 14, how much you get over there? I said, not much. Just don't worry. Let me see that. Come on. I'm sitting there, so I give it to you, whatever. You didn't say anything. You just kind of shook your head and laughed a little bit and just gave it back. Little did I know, I'm sure you may not remember it, but I'm sure you do. I went the next day to deposit my check, and you swapped checks with me, and you gave me your game check, and you took mine. I will never, ever forget that as long as I live. Do you remember that?
I do.
You signed your game check to me, and I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, I think it was whatever, but yours was like, I'm like, for you to do that was just unbelievable. Like people look at me like I'm an alien because he didn't do it. Yes, he did do that. Like people don't realize how good you are, how good Aaron is, how good guys that, you know, are and how you guys are as far as taking care of younger guys. And I was a younger guy, not by, you know, me and you, but from a baseball standpoint, I was a younger guy. Here it was. You took care of me. I remember it was unbelievable. Brett, it's like, it's one of the nicest things anybody's ever done for me.
You know what though? In our my generation, I was taught very well. I got to the big leagues and, you know, I got hazed quite a bit, but in a good way. I had good guys around me that really kept me in my place. Cause you know me, I'm pretty vocal.
Oh, yeah.
When I was young, I'm pretty brash. I could also take it. But Jay Buhner and Chris Bosio and that type of player, the Norm Charltons of the world. When I was young, coming up, I had that brash exterior. Those guys would give me the hardest time. Sit down and shut up. They'd tear apart my suits, cut my suits.
Yes.
But I remember to this day, and I've talked about it a lot. Jay Buhner was as hard on me as anybody when I got to the ballpark. But I'll tell you what, he took care of. He gave me his condo. He gave me his keys to a car. I would try to pay the electric bill at his condo. He'd like get pissed at me. I'd give him a check. He'd throw it back in my face. They'd cut my suits in half. It seemed like every road trip we went on, I'll tell you what, we got to the next city. He'd take, get your ass in the lobby at 10 a.m. All right, Jay told me to be there. I'd be there. We'd go shopping. But he'd be, you know, like, shut up. Da, 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 da. Next thing you know, I have two new suits.
Yep.
So it was tough love, but it was guys that really kind of taught me, that helped me grow up and helped me be a pro and helped me be a big yep. leaguer. So I had really good teachers when it came.
Well, it was the captain. Let's see, Barry and Mo Man, Pete Harnish.
Mo Man. Yeah.
Mo Man.
I remember Mike Morgan.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
One of the greatest of all time, buddy. But I remember you had him, Pete Harnish, Barry. You know, Barry did what they did to you. He cut my left sleeve and my right leg, and we went through customs. I forget. We went to St. Louis and then went. We had to walk through customs, and then we're going to St. Louis, and then Bernie must have had. I had five suits that Barry had already measured me for with my uniform stuff. He already got them, gave them to Bernie. They're in my locker the next day in St. Louis. But then they made us wear the. You guys went to the. Goodwill. We had to walk through customs going from St. Louis to Montreal. That was a good one.
Mike Morgan was a roommate, or he lived next door to me in Cincy one year. And this is what I remember about Mike Morgan. Classic.
Yes. Just
a beauty. And I hear this crash at my front door. He had made his own, like, Egg McMuffin sandwich next door for me. It was a day game, right? We were riding to the yard together. This is Mike Morgan. It's probably 97, 98. And I go to my front door. There's a toilet plunger plunged onto my front door glass. So it's just sitting there and it's sticking out. Inside, I pull the plunger away. Inside, there's a breakfast sandwich. So I grab it. It's pretty good. It's like an Egg McMuffin, but like a home version of Egg McMuffin. I'll never forget this. I get in the car. I said, hey, Mike, I said, I appreciate the breakfast sandwich. It's like an Egg McMuffin. He said, Booney, that's an Egg McMo Man. One of the best sandwiches I've ever had. That's in a nutshell for those of you watching and listening. Mike Morgan, the right-handed starting pitcher for years and years, has a hell of a career. Big time with the Cubs.
One of the greatest people of all. That year in 97, he was mad at me because I wouldn't take his locker because that was Pop's locker. And I told him, I said, Mo man, I'm not taking your locker. Like you can do it. I'm not taking your, it's your dad's. You have to take it. Yeah. Because, and I remember it was the flip flops on the plane. He had one jacket, one collared shirt, and jeans. Oh my God. And then the forearm. Do you remember the forearm?
Oh yeah.
He flexed the forearm and it for the slider. He used to tell me all the time. Oh my God, that's one of the greatest Mo Man stories. That's an Egg McMo Man.
Egg McMo Man with the plunger on the front door, stuck to my front door. Inside the plunger was the sandwich.
Oh my God.
It's unbelievable. What are you up to these days? Tell me about the kids. What are you doing?
So
where are you filming this from?
I'm in my bunker in Cincinnati. No, I'm in my basement at Cincy. We live in Cincy. My son is transferring into Spalding University this fall in Lexington or Louisville, Kentucky. He's going to play for Larry Owens, head coach there. My daughter plays soccer at Hiram University up. It's a D3 up in Ohio. I manage a collegiate summer league in the Gulf Shores Leagues. Shout out to Rustler Nation, 2-time defending champs. Let's ride. All about the nation. But other than that, pal, I'm just a normal guy. I'd love to get back in the game, but I'm not going to get back in with all this crazy stuff going on, man. I'm a baseball player. I want to teach baseball, man. I don't want to have to go through hoops and bounds and everything to try to go help somebody, you know, and make a call here, make a call there. I'm not that good at being a yes man, you know what I mean? But just being a normal guy, man. I mean, ever since, this is the first interview I've done since Pop passed, and I just kind of, you know, Booney, I just kind of wanted to get away from it all and just kind of mourn and just kind of just be a normal guy and just do normal things. You know what I mean? I mean, listen, I'm proud as can be of who I am and who Pops was and everything. But, you know, I'd love to get back in at some point, but we'll see what happens. Man, I miss going to the ballpark. You know, that's what doing the college summer league, it gets me, you know, it's actually ran out of the Braves complex down in Northport. So it's kind of like rookie ball. We play at 8:30 in the morning, hit at 7:00. But that gives me my baseball feel. But, you know, I miss going to the ballpark. You know, you got to do it last year with Texas. You did a hell of a job, by the way, man. I thought for sure you'd go back. But, you know, you miss going to the ballpark, man. It's in our blood, man. It's I miss being around the guys and just the camaraderie that you have with the guys. And, you know, not so much the baseball stuff. I mean, I do miss that, but all the stuff that surrounds it, the stuff we just talked about. I mean, all that kind of stuff. But everything else is good, man. Just living in Cincy, I'll probably, you know, be buried here at some point and, you know, just doing every normal day stuff. You know what I mean?
Got it. Well, Petey, I appreciate you doing this, man. It was fun.
My pleasure.
And anytime I get to talk to you, I know I'm going to laugh. So I really appreciate you doing that. For those of you out there watching Brett Boone podcast on YouTube, it's now on YouTube. Check it out. For those of you listening to the Brett Boone podcast, download on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Petey.
You got it, pal.